The Jacksonville Jaguars select Mason Smith, defensive tackle, LSU.
When you look at him, Joel, and you're looking at trying to build out your defensive front, and you bring over Eric Armstead, who's huge. We know about Trayvon Walker and what a physical freak he was as the first overall pick. They've got some rare dudes now just in terms of the size, length, and athleticism up front.
Rolls away from pressure, in trouble. Just throws it up for grabs, and it is intercepted. Jarian Jones picked it off. Caitlin Robinson on the return. There he goes. Robinson inside the 40. They finally get a chance. Everybody breaks the tackle, and Robinson looking back at the defender. Touchdown, Texas. 95-yard return.
With the 114th pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select Javon Foster, tackle, Missouri.
Duval!
1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Dylan Denmark.
All right, good morning, everybody. Welcome in. Happy Wednesday to you, Jaguars Today. Getting a little separation from the NFL draft. We're going to reflect on the offseason today that has passed up to this point. And most of the heavy lifting is done. There still could be some surprise moves. We could get a Trevor Lawrence contract extension in the offing at some point. In fact, Tony Smith, good morning. I would be surprised if we don't get one before the season starts.
I'm right there with you at this point. Yeah,
he's been taking care of business on that kind of front. You know what I mean? I mean, it wasn't that long ago that people were split, will we get a Josh Allen deal done? And he got that done before the draft and, you know, and stuck in a couple of others along the way. So they're highly motivated to make this kind of the crowning achievement of the offseason, I think.
It certainly feels that way. And it is one of those situations where if they weren't able to get it done this offseason for whatever reason and it happened next year, okay.
Yeah, you know, it'd be fine, right?
Like, whatever the timeline on that is, I expect them to be getting a long-term deal done with Trevor Lawrence, you know, at some point in time. And if it happened today, I'll celebrate it when it happens.
Wouldn't surprise me if it happened today, next week, and during training camp at any point.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, it would surprise me during the season because the Jags have had that.
They don't do that.
Not negotiate during the season. But this is more like, what if you were close to the finish line kind of thing? I feel like you can make exceptions in life. But anyway, I think they'll have it done well before the season's ready to dawn. You know, today, part of the reaction to Trent Baalke's offseason will be what went down yesterday, which included the release of Zay Jones. And a lot of people have asked, what's going to happen if one of our top three receivers gets hurt? What's going to happen if any team's top three receivers get hurt? I'll tell you what, Zay Jones can count himself lucky I'm not the GM of the Jaguars. Because with $30 million in cap space, there's no need to cut Zay Jones today. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because that's the only thing. Like, Tony, you get into the season, one of your top three receivers gets hurt, you're going to be playing a guy who is nowhere near as accomplished or well-regarded or, you know, as a prospect thought of, whatever. That's just the nature of the league. You can look at the Jags. What are the Jags going to do if one of their top two edge rushers goes down? Well, what is most teams going to do if one of their top two edge rushers go down? Put a guy in there and hope for the best, but not expect anywhere near that same level of production with almost every team in the National Football League. Not all, but almost everyone. The ones that have that, they may be deficient in another area. With the Jags, what if Gabe Davis has an injury in July and you're not sure he's going to be back for the start of the season? You know, like, that's the kind of thing where I might have to reconsider. I've got the cap space. The savings in cash is significant. It's $10.7 million that the team doesn't need to pay out, but you're only saving less than half of that in cap space, which is not insignificant, but I've heard people say, well, maybe they're going to use this cap space to do X or Y. They don't need it. They already have cap space. There's no one there. Unless they push a ton of Trevor Lawrence money into this year somehow in the structuring of a deal, which they could do, but it's not like they were deficient in the ability to do that prior to that move yesterday.
No.
Like, I would have kept Zay around just for the simple fact that I don't have an issue that he's not on the 53, right? Because you don't always have a guy that accomplished. You're not paying a guy $11 million to be your fourth receiver. But if something happens between now and September, well, I'm going to hope that it doesn't, but I would have liked to at least had that alternative in my back pocket.
Yeah, I would have been okay if they wanted to keep Zay Jones. And you can count me among the group that was a little bit surprised when it came down. As I said, when I saw it on Demetrius's timeline, I was like, is this really Demetrius? Right? Zay Jones got cut. Mm-hmm. It caught me that off guard that they were willing to cut Zay Jones now. Right? And, you know, having thought about it for a day, and you look at, I can understand the reasons why the Jags may have done it when they've done it. Right? Like, I can understand those things.
I think they're doing it to do him a solid.
I think that's a big part of it. And I'm okay if that's part of why they made the decision that they made yesterday. I do think none of us know exactly what the new kickoff rules are going to do for what you do with active players on game day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we just don't know what the actual repercussions of that are going to be. DuVernay was going to be active.
Of course.
Right? Like, he's going to be the primary kick and punt returner for the football team, and the punt return game doesn't change. Coverage and blocking on punts does not change with the new kickoff rules, but the new kickoff rules does affect what bodies do you have on the field for kickoff coverage now, and what bodies do you have on the field to block on kickoff return now from it just a game day, these are the guys we need to be active today to play kickoff coverage, right? And I don't know exactly what the impact of that is going to be from a, this is what we need to be active today on game day. But if Zay Jones is not a guy that you're looking at saying, yeah, we can get him active on game day as our fifth wide receiver, essentially, right, with DuVernay being the four because he is a special teams mm-hmm. guy. You know he's going to be as our fifth wide receiver. I think that is more complicated than it has been in previous years. Not that you can't get it done, but it is more complicated, and I'm not sure how the Jaguars or any team really want to approach it.
And I don't disagree with any of that. My only point being, if from the Jags' perspective,
yeah,
right, it doesn't do Zay Jones any favors. He wants to catch on with the team now
yeah.
while there are opportunities.
It's saving you money that you don't need to save now.
Right, you're still going to save that money if
absolutely.
You wait. And that's the only thing I'm saying. Like, if all right, that's all that's great when we get to the season and we don't have a plan to have Zay Jones active on game day. Is it worth paying him this much? No, it's not. Okay. But what if something happens between now and the regular season?
Sure.
And you had that alternative already in the building. Guy who knows the offense can play inside and outside. Zay played a lot of slot before he came to Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. So he's a versatile guy. But I agree with you. You probably didn't have. You know, very likely you could see a scenario where Parker Washington, if he is part of the kickoff return package, you know, if he earns that spot next to DuVernay, if in fact that's the way they go, or at least there's sometimes they go, he can play some slot for you. Like if one of your outside guys get hurt in the game, Christian Kirk can move outside. Parker yeah. Washington can contribute in both ways, whereas Zay is just kind of waiting for four receiver sets, you know, barring an injury to get on the field to do anything for you. I totally get that aspect of it. Today, we'll see if John Shipley gets the aspects of what the Jags have been doing this offseason, as he will join us from Jaguar Report coming up in about 30 minutes from now. And then next hour, Chad Ryder will swing by from NFL.com and tell us how many bad reaches that Trent Baalke made. I don't know if that's how Chad feels about what Trent Baalke did, but it pretty much, like, I think it's pretty clear that Baalke selected players ahead of where people perceive them to be or where the, quote, consensus board mm-hmm. was this year. Is this the first time we've ever had what's the consensus board? I know there are boards. Like, I need Arif Hassan, used to cover the Vikings, mm-hmm. Put one out, and I don't know if he did it, put it together, compiled it, but people have been referring to it. I feel like more than in the past. But regardless, Trent Baalke took guys ahead of where some guys were ranked there. So generally, that leads to mediocre to bad draft reviews because, you know, in the pundit's mind, hey, if I have this guy as the 50th player and you took him as the 20th player, the 150th player, and you took him at 120, mm-hmm. you're reaching for the guy. So we'll see what Chad Ryder feels about him from NFL.com. That's coming up in about an hour and 10 minutes from now. But in the meantime, we did this two ways, as we mentioned yesterday, you know, what they tell you on Top Chef, Tony, just do it one way really well,
yeah.
okay? But, hey, we did it two ways anyway, all right? We did a poll version, one click. You want to vote on your feelings about Trent Baalke. We did a give your detail as much as you'd like version of it. You can do both if you want. But which of these choices best describe how you feel about the job Jaguar general manager Trent Baalke has done so far this offseason? The poll version, Great job, good job, average at best, or below average slash bad job. Okay? So I think those are fair categories. I think there are people that are happy, but there's a difference between great and good. There are more positive options on here, although average at best is kind of meh. You know, so you got that. You can vote one click, or we asked you as well, are you happy with the job Trent Baalke has done? Better than expected? Worse? Give us your thoughts in as much detail as you care to, and you can do that on social media at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, and at 1010XL, Denmark.
Go Tigers.
Hey, what's up, Pocket?
Hey, what's up, man? How you been?
How you doing?
I'm good. We're, I don't know. I was going to say something, but it's...
What were you going to say?
It's just another day of practice, you know.
What?
Same old, same old. You know, it's Wednesday, hump day. It's the first of the month, actually.
It is the first of the month. Rabbit to you and to all. To all, good night. So, are you upset with the kids?
No, I don't know. I was going to say something dumb, and I'm like, I don't know what to say, actually.
You know what? I'll just keep it myself. I'll just announce. I was going to say something dumb and thought better of it. So, I probably should try that tactic more often in my life, too, but I just barrel right ahead. All right. Well, Pockets is here, 641-1010. He'll answer your call and put you on the air if you want to get in on the All-Pro Roofing phone lines or on the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures. You know, maybe we need to go through, like, the hits and the misses from our perspective, a Trent Baalke, to kind of figure out where we come to the conclusion of where things stand. Again, keep it in mind, Tony and I would have been quite happy with a change in the front office for the last several years. But as we say every offseason, if they're going to keep him, let's evaluate him, what he does this cycle. And so far, I'm pretty happy with what he's done. You don't have to be. Let us know how you feel about it. Tell us why you think we're being overly optimistic on Trent Baalke, if that's the way you feel, at 641-1010. You're listening to Jaguars Today. Keep it right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
All right, moving along on this Wednesday, we'll get some more reaction to the offseason that has been from John Shipley coming up from Jaguar Report in about 25 minutes, and then Chad Ryder from NFL.com reviewing the Jaguars draft selections at 11:20 this morning. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Dylan Denmark here with you. If you'd like to get in, talk about primarily today the Jags' moves they've made this offseason and how they reflect on the job that Trent Baalke has done. And we'll have to know, you know, where your starting point was. Were you a kind of, Baalke's an all right guy anyway? Or were you anything he touches turns to garbage? Or, you know, I mean, there it depends. So your perspective may be, you know, well, better than I expected. I don't think it was great, but for Baalke, it was good, you know?
And I think it, we had so much of the Baalke perspective early in the offseason of, well, he's definitely not going to do X, Y, and Z.
Yes.
Right? Like, he's too stubborn to actually change center. He's not moving Fortner.
Won't sign Josh Allen because he didn't draft him.
Right.
Like, heard that all the time.
We heard enough of that from people that today's a good day to ask this kind of question, because you were dead wrong that he was unwilling to change center and unwilling to sign Josh Allen to a long-term deal. If you were one of the people who felt that way about it, you couldn't have been more wrong.
But to be fair, if you said there's no way he can trade up in the draft, no, he didn't, but you were right, and didn't trade up in the draft, right?
Yes.
And now, do I believe there's no way? Look, I think anybody can trade up if they're willing to overpay, you know, and it all depends on the circumstance, but if that's how you feel about it, you got further evidence of that, at least if that's how you approach that. Like, Trent, that I hear that a lot. Well, Trent Baalke, I don't understand why they would be willing to trade up to Trent's spot if they don't like him and you know, overpay like Minnesota did. But, you know, I hear that all the time. Baalke doesn't have the relationships that enable him to trade in the NFL draft. That's some people's point of view. I don't agree with it, but nevertheless, 641-1010, doesn't have to be Baalke specific, but let's talk Jaguar football with you here, beginning with our man Jerome on the west side, kicking things off this morning. Good morning, Jerome. How are you?
Good morning. How y'all doing?
Excellent, man. What's on your mind?
Man, I really do think that Baalke should be on the hot seat this year, man. I feel like there's certain decisions that, you know, he could have made before that it just feels like he waits too long to make a decision. And, for instance, like when Dave Caldwell was the general manager and he realized, hey, we need help on the interior line, he went and traded for Marcel Darius, I think that was his name, from Buffalo, to get help to stop the run, you know what I mean? And we ended up going to the AFC Championship that year. Now, Bulky last year, we knew we needed help, and he didn't do nothing. Nothing. He stood there and let us get abused. And, you know, there was no protection. And then they blame it all on the defense because they couldn't score. And it's like, I just, you know, I think there's a lot going on. So I feel like to let Houston come up and pass us like this, man, I think he should be on the hot seat if we don't make the playoffs.
Okay. All right. So not making the playoffs is your kind of litmus test for this year. I'm just trying to gauge, and that's fair. I'm just asking.
Because he set the bar.
No, I understand.
He set the bar when we went to the – oh, okay.
No, all I'm asking is what your definition of, you know, like what the line is. So for you, if they don't make the playoffs, then you'd like to move on. Is that fair?
Yeah, because I think you should be consistent. As long as you're in the playoffs, you have a shot every year. So, I mean – To fail like we did last year and knowing that we were screaming for edge rush and we needed this and that, and he didn't do nothing but sit there and watch us fail. And, I mean, we went down the drain, yo, last year. That hurts. That stings right now. It still stings.
Okay.
And I just, you know, I feel like the bar was set 2 years ago when we went to the playoffs, and then last year he wanted to run it back with the same people. And, you know, it's like, man, everybody else is getting better and we're staying the same. Like, and then we choked. You know what I mean? We end up choking. So I just feel like, he should be on the hot seat.
All right, Joe, I appreciate it, man. Thank you. Look, you're entitled to that
fair
opinion,
enough.
Right? I'll say when they were 8-3 and playing Cincinnati for the number one seed in the AFC, if they, it did look like they had gotten better. And, you know, you look, they choked down the stretch. Did Trent Baalke sign a bunch of choking players? Did the coaching staff not get it out of those players? Did the players not perform in crunch time? You know what I mean? Like the trade deadline's passed. You know, Trevor Lawrence gets hurt, or Christian Kirk's hurt, or Zay Jones is hurt. You can't go trade for a wide receiver late in the season. You know, the trade deadline's long in the rearview mirror at that point in time. You know, I don't know. You're not the only person who feels that way. No. I don't think it was lack of pass rush as it turned out. Like, we all laughed. Tony Boselli, Jags are going to get 25 sacks to the point where he immediately revised it down to like 23 out of their top two guys. And they blew past it.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe Trent was like, hey, you know what? Trayvon Walker is going to break out this year. The need for another pass rusher is not as great. Now we all clamored for it. I have wanted them to add one, and there were plenty of opportunities.
Certainly.
And I don't argue that for a second. But what happened last year is already baked into the cake. Like, Sean Conn has already looked at what happened last year, and I think his final assessment was, well, we didn't make the playoffs, but we had a winning record for the second time in a row for the first time in my tenure. If the Jags go 9-8 and don't make the playoffs, Sean Conn's not going to be thrilled about it. I just can't. I think it's going to have to be a lot worse than that for Trent Baalke's job to be in any kind of jeopardy.
I tend to agree with you. And I think you can look at what they did or didn't do last year. Obviously, there was a willingness to make a big bet that trading for Calvin Ridley was going to have a major impact.
Mm-hmm.
And that was going to be the major impact they were going to have in last year's offseason. They didn't do a whole lot in free agency beyond that. You know, they signed McManus. Like, that was the biggest deal they made in free agency.
And he was outstanding until he wasn't.
Right. Like, it fell apart on him. We had talked about it throughout the entire process. When are they going to address whoever the third edge guy is going to be? They didn't. Right? They told you over and over, we feel comfortable with Kalyvon Chaisson. Well, Chaisson's gone now. So we'll see what they'll have to do. I think you can't make the argument that you made last offseason for Trent's not trying this offseason. Right? Not based on what they've done in this offseason.
And I don't think he would characterize it last year as not trying. I think he would say, look, we had a conservative offseason based on where we stood with our cap space, with our young players that we're counting on some development from. Again, you get judged by your results, okay? And
yes,
it didn't fall exactly the way they thought it was going to fall. But they also didn't go 3-14 last year.
No.
You know, they did go 9-8 last year. And, you know,
if they had won one of those last five,
here's the thing.
This is what I think
would have happened. If McManus makes a kick against Cincinnati, right, and nothing else changes, then they win that game, okay? Yeah. And they end up going and winning the division at 10-7, right? What the people like Jerome – and by the way, Jerome's not alone in his opinion. It's not this way out of left field opinion from him. But those people would be saying, yeah, you know what? They had missed the playoffs, he'd be gone. And he wouldn't have been, right? Because we see, because that reality came true, and he's still here. And I think that, I think that would be the feeling like, we won 10, but barely. You know, we should have won 12, or we should have won whatever. Everybody always wants to win more. And the idea of you let Houston jump past you can't control what Houston's doing. I mean, good on Houston for finding C.J. Stroud. Bad on Carolina for picking the wrong quarterback. That's what screwed the Jaguars, but has nothing to do with the Jags. I mean, Houston was terrible. They got a lot better. They made a lot of good moves. Trent Baalke can't stop them from making those moves. Doug Peterson can't stop them. No. Nobody can stop them. No. You know? Let's hope they make a bunch of bad moves now this time around. Honestly, I mean.
Yeah.
All right, let's get Christoph across the pond checking in next on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Christoph.
Good afternoon, guys. How are you guys doing?
Good afternoon to you, sir. What's up?
I'm just calling to comment on the draft and stuff like that. And I've got to give it to Trent. Whenever there's a question about something, he sticks to his measurables. I mean, those guys that he's drafted are monsters, especially the second and third round picks and Stevie's pick as well. It's like, we're going to have some big dudes on, especially on the defense and offensive lines. And yeah.
Does that make you happy? Do you think that's a good process, or do you think that's Trent being Trent, and I'd rather have more productive players than just the measurables guys?
I think Trent is sticking to his measurables, and he's hedging his bets, or he's relying on Doug Peterson to be the coach that he is, and to coach these guys up mm-hmm. and get them in the best positions possible to take advantage of them. If you know what I mean. Like, he's giving Doug these physical freaks as raw materials, and he's saying, turn them into great football players.
Yeah, there's some of that, I think. And I think all GMs have some of that aspect to them. I think that's kind of the nature of the job to some degree.
Yeah. I especially being a fan, you know, I like the Jerry and Jones pick and stuff like that. Just like, you know, how he was say he grew up during like a Jaguars
yep.
and stuff like that. But like, it was just cool. I enjoyed this draft a lot more than last year. You know, I think we got better, and only time will tell if we're all right or if we're all wrong.
Ain't that the truth, bro? It's the same way every offseason, Christoph. We wish you all the best, brother. Happy good Wednesday afternoon to you, sir.
Yeah.
You are a few hours ahead of us over
happy
there
May.
In the UK. Yes, happy May. Rabbit, everybody. But look, to be fair, and I heard, I think it was maybe Dan and Jeff talking about this the other day. It could have been somebody else. But, Trayvon Walker was a projection to some degree. Now, we can still have the debate, did he take the right guy? But he saw a vision of this guy, if we coach him up and make him comfortable in one spot, he's got the ability to be whatever. Well, he took a pretty big step in that direction last year, you know? So does that guarantee Mason Smith is going to, you know, be a Pro Bowler by year two in the league? No, it doesn't. But that's the vision he has for guys like that.
He's willing to bank on those measurable things.
You can't find – the measurables are rare, right? So if you can find a guy who has that – plus athletic ability who can actually play football right, and can be coached to use that athletic ability to its best, there's certain guys that are just physically limited that are never going to be able to do certain things that Mason Smith is capable of doing. Now, can Mason Smith do those things on a consistent basis and still do all the other things he needs to do well to make him a value at the 48th pick? Time will tell.
Yeah, in a process that is your best guess. Right, at what you think these guys are going to be. And that's the draft in a nutshell. This is what I think, right? And so you are a GM being willing to bet on these are the measurables I want, right, in a player at this position. This is what I'm looking for physically from a player in this position, and we'll evaluate what he does on the field, right, because we got tape on that too. And if the two things come together, it's like, yeah, I like this, right? There's a reason why you can understand the process for Trent Baalke in that. It doesn't mean that you have to have those measurables to be successful in the National Football League necessarily, but I don't blame any general manager for saying these are what I need out
some
of a player
GMs
playing defensive
are like
end.
That, right? Yeah. And look, sometimes it's I haven't even seen it on the field, but I think if we get this guy in our lab, and this happens and leads to a lot of mistakes every single year, it
Absolutely.
Also leads to tremendous fines in the draft on GMs that are willing to take a chance. And you know what they say about those guys when they're right? They're visionaries, Tony.
Yeah.
They saw it. They saw it when nobody else did. They're
Everyone's
going to
want to
do
what he's doing.
Look,
yeah.
Do you think he doesn't want to win, honestly? Do you think?
Yeah,
of course he wants to win, right? So he wants – you think he wouldn't like the narrative of being like GM of the year or a Super Bowl champion GM here in Jacksonville and just to shove it all back in everybody's face, right? I mean, it's human nature, right? Mm-hmm. So he's doing it the way – he thinks is the best. He's got one shot. This is his chance to mold a team in the way that he sees fit. So, you know, we have to live with the results.
I would love to see him be successful doing it.
Wouldn't we all? Bush Drive Rich is up next. What's up, Rich?
What's going on, fellas?
How are you, man?
I'm doing all right, man. Just trying to make it.
Good. What
listen,
you got?
Listen, I'm over here on Bush Drive, and I got to give my boy Trent some love, man. I mean, the man has been killing it in free agency. He's got what we needed. The contracts have been, you know, not astronomical like they used to be back in the day. We're getting name brand players that want to come here. I mean, the draft, the man got two picks for next year's draft. I mean, I'm sorry, Jacksonville. The man has done a good job. We need to give the man his props, all right? We need to stop the hate, give the man some love, and let the man know that he's appreciated here for what he's done so far.
All right, Rich. You know, that is the rare element in this, right? I think there are a lot of people. And look, I don't think Trent Baalke is sitting there going, today you have to shower me with praise, right?
Yeah, no.
I hope he's not because, look, he's done an okay job. But the proof really, we can all sit here and grade drafts and grade free agency, and I'm with Rich. I think he's done a good job, right? He's hit needs. And what he's saying, like, it didn't seem like there's a massive Jaguar tax, right? Like, oh, yeah, we can get him if we pay $20 million more than anybody else. At least that was the feeling. I don't know if it was ever really that case. You know what I mean? Sometimes a dollar more is what people are looking for. But I do think this is an attractive spot, you know, for certain types of players. And obviously Gabe Davis was coming back home, so to speak, to the state of Florida. That was an important thing. But I tell you what, a guy like Gabe Davis, you think he's not excited to – look, if you got to leave Josh Allen – Trevor Lawrence is a pretty good consolation prize here, man. He's not going to play with Bryce Young in this situation, you know?
And he's been able to watch him play live the last couple of years. Like, he's got an idea who Trevor is.
Been beating them, so Trevor's been beating them, I should say. Let's get our man Byron in before the break, and we'll come back with John Shipley on the other side. Byron in Gainesville, what's up?
Oh, guys, thank you so much for taking my call. I love the show, man, and I always love your callers. And you know I can't talk without saying –
Duval!
Hey guys, I'm enjoying all the calls, man. I kind of go with the last one. I've been watching him for 3 years. We just signed Trevor and ATN, and those were his draft choices. I'm trying to evaluate it, but I think he's doing a good job, you know. And I don't know if he wants to give him his props or nothing, but hey, you know, I think he's. Yeah, let me say this, guys. Where I want to go with this call is Jerome hit on something, man. Houston came back. I thought they were going into the dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how these teams are coming back. I'm also with the East Side, and the reason I'm saying that is Richardson. He's coming back in Indy. And Tennessee has always been a thorn. Guys, I'm going to just say this real quick. The NFC North is probably the weakest conference with New Orleans and Carolina. When you add in the Cardinals and maybe the New York team, which is no weak team. So, what I'm going to just say real quick, guys, if you want to hit on the schedule, but I don't know if it's Baalke doing a bad job or everybody in the NFL is getting tough. man, show me a weak team and a weak game in there, and I'll show you something. The NFL is something else, and you got to be tough. And I think Bulky's addressing that. He's getting bigger, better, I hope, and coaching up better. So that's what you got to do now, and every game is going to be a dogfight, and we need the dogs. Thanks, guys. Go Jags!
Go Jags! Thank you, Meyer. Look, man, it's the same way every year, right? This is the easy game on the schedule. This is the easy game on the schedule. This is going to be the hard game, and
psych,
half the time.
It's not how the NFL works.
Right. It's like, I mean, look, Buffalo lost to the Jets right out of the gates with Zach Wilson for an injured Aaron Rodgers last year.
All 32 teams at this point in their offseason think that they got better. And a lot of them are convincing themselves that they got significantly better, potentially in this offseason. And then the games start.
Sure.
And whatever you thought was, this is where we got better, gets exposed as, oh, I guess not. Right? Like, and it happens so quickly that it's hard to plan for that kind of stuff, but it's going to happen to a bunch of teams across the league. I hope Jacksonville is very, very far away from all of that when it happens, but that's the NFL, man. It's the nature of it.
All right, we hope you take the opportunity to respond to our questions of the day. They're basically a similar one. One's just a one-click poll. Which of these choices best describes how you feel about the job that Trent Baalke has done for the Jags this offseason to this point? Was it a great job, a good job, average at best, or below average slash bad job? And a second post, are you happy with the job he's done? Better than expected, worse? Give us your thoughts in as much detail as you care to. We'll get some detail from John Shipley, a Jaguar report. He's coming up straight ahead. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line. Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Big Ship, John Shipley here, Jaguar Report. You know him, you love him. Got all the superstars coming in this week to reflect on what the Jaguars have done. Not just with the draft, but in the last couple of days, fifth-year options picked up. The long tenure of Joey Sly has come to an end. And Zay Jones no longer with the team. John Shipley is with Jaguars Today this morning. Good morning, John.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys doing?
We're hanging in there, man. Tell me about the timing of this Zay Jones release. Is this simply a favor to Zay to give him a chance to catch on post-draft with a team? Because it seems to me, John, even if you don't want him on the team, like if you don't envision maybe a game day role for him, what happens if you get an injury in the next several months in the offseason? I mean, you've got the cap space. There was no immediate need to create more. What did you make of the timing of the move?
Yeah, I just think that, you know, say they had re-signed Calvin Ridley a few months ago. I think this move happens a few months ago. I think this move was always going to happen once they added a receiver. It, you know, to me, it was more or less kind of spelled out throughout the offseason that they was there kind of in a holding pattern as an insurance option, but that they were targeting a wide receiver. And once you do that, just number four receivers, unless they play special teams, there's just not much of a role. And I know there's the injury argument to make. Especially, you know, over the course of the offseason, what if something happens in training camp? But, you know, they signed four undrafted receivers for a reason. They obviously like some of the younger guys that they had last year who they want to see get legitimate reps this offseason. And I think you can make an argument at most of their positions and most probably receiving corps in the NFL that if you lose a guy, you're in trouble. I mean, if the Eagles lose Devonta Smith or A.J. Brown, they're going to have a non-starting caliber receiver step into the lineup. It's just the nature of how wide receiver rooms are built. If you're not a starter and you don't play special teams, it's going to be hard to find a role for you, especially at $10 million.
With the money that they're, you know, saving with the Zay move, and obviously they had plenty that they could spend. We've talked about it all week now, Ship. What do you look at as the biggest needs for this team now that most of the offseason work has gotten done?
I think edge three is still a pretty major need. I think Miles Cole, as interesting as his traits are, is more likely to be a practice squad player than he is to be, you know, edge three. So Travis Gibson right now looks to be that guy. Eric Armstead can play some defensive end. He's done it before, you know, in San Francisco. I think Yusuf Abdullah might make more sense as now, honestly, an off-ball linebacker, maybe as a Sam linebacker than as a true defensive end. So I think edge three for the second year in a row is a pretty big. They identified that last offseason. You know, they didn't make any official moves to upgrade it, but I mean, they had Jadeveon Clowney in the building, you know, for a reason. It was a spot they wanted to upgrade to an extent. I think they're probably going to look at it again this off season. But edge is normally one of those positions that's heaviest, you know, throughout the summer, at least compared to other positions. So there will be options out there. There are guys out there like Carl Lawson who they can potentially bring in, Bud Dupree. There are a lot of names out there.
What do you feel about a veteran corner like an Xavier Howard, Stephon Gilmore, anybody else? Guy who's, you know, would at least raise an eyebrow with name recognition if the Jags were to add him.
I mean, I think it makes sense, you know, for questions people have about the wide receiver deficit. You know, they lose somebody, now is they gone? I think that question is even more prevalent at the quarterback position. You know, I'm a big fan of Ronald Darby's game. He's in, like, the advanced metrics, you know, in terms of press coverage cornerback. Probably at his cost, one of the most efficient cornerbacks the team has rostered right now. But he's still probably better as a cornerback three rather than, you know, a true two. So they definitely could use another name in there, another guy to fill out the cornerback room. Because right now you look at it as, you know, there are two veterans, the two rookies that they drafted, and then guys battling for those fifth and sixth spots. It makes sense to me to give one of those, you know, five or six cornerback spots to another veteran.
What is your take on the Brian Thomas Jr. pick, and what is fair to expect out of him in his rookie year?
Yeah, I can honestly say that, you know, the Jaguars' first-round process, you know, I complimented it a lot last year when they moved down twice and got Anton Harrison. I think this one was even better just because of the value of the picks that they got. So they almost could have picked, you know, one of us three at that spot after the trade, and I wouldn't think it's a bad pick. But I think Thomas himself, you know, I was a little bit surprised that didn't seem like the kind of receiver they targeted before, but just in terms of traits, you know, he makes a lot of sense. Massive frame, massive wingspan, really good vertical threat. He can be a vertical guy, you know, from year one. That's not a role that he has to go into. He can immediately bring some value, and he has some physical athletic traits that suggest that he can be more than just a vertical guy. You know, people have made the comparison to aren't him and Gabe Davis kind of filling the same role. Well, Gabe Davis, you know, as solid of a player as he is what he is at this point. He's not going to grow into, you know, more of a level of player than he is. Brian Thomas can start out in that kind of role, but he has the traits to grow into much more. So he'll be an interesting guy to watch as he develops.
I don't know. I think I'm not saying Gabe Davis is going to be a superstar, but I think we looked at Zay Jones when he came in and were like, what are we getting here exactly? What are we paying for? And then, you know, with a greater opportunity, Zay became, to me, a better player than he had been previously, so I think that possibility exists for Gabe, but I don't want to get too hung up on that ship. Let's talk about trading up in the draft, or the lack of trades up. I know you remarked that trying to try to get back into the first round, which would have taken a lot of draft capital to do. It would have been interesting to see what those offers were like. I got the sense they tried to move up maybe in the second round at the top to get one of those corners. How do you, you know, people come at and tell us they feel that Trent can't do that because he doesn't have the relationships to get it done. My counter is, look, it's not always easy to get a deal done because those teams want the players that are available then, and other teams are trying to trade in that spot as well. What do you make of the Jags' efforts to move up and not getting anything done on that front?
Yeah, it was interesting. On the first night of the draft, you know, when they came into the media room, I think it was DeRocco had asked Trent, you know, did you guys try to trade back into the first? And he, you know, made a remark along the lines of, well, we're here after the draft. Read into that, you know, what you may, as he left. So it was obvious they had tried to trade back up into the first, in my opinion. And then he mentioned the same thing, kind of like he did last year, where there were efforts made in the second round, but it just didn't come to fruition. I don't think it has anything to do with relationships or anything like that. Draft picks look the same. They're all general managers, no matter who's on the other end of the phone. I sincerely do not think that's anything, you know, like really substantial to have a stance on. I do think that you look at some of these trades up. I mean, the Rams gave up a future second round pick to move up for, you know, Fisk of FSU.
Right.
It would have cost a lot. And I think that's the reason they didn't trade up. He, you know, his biggest trade up for Devin Lloyd, when he went up from 33 to, I think it was 27, he gave up a fourth round pick. Those are the kind of picks I see him giving up. I don't see him giving up the future seconds, the future thirds. And I know it frustrates people. I had forgotten how much fans hate trading down and not trading up until this past weekend. But it's probably, if you want to like call it a spade, it's probably the right move to do with it.
I probably would have traded down to like 17 of the last 20 drafts. Seriously, yeah, in the first round. And you don't trade down all throughout the draft. But yeah. in the first round, man.
As Balky said, the analytics always are going to tell you.
I wasn't moving on Trevor, you know, and there are certain picks. I wasn't going to – when Josh Allen fell in their lap, I wouldn't have moved out of that spot. But, man, I love that added capital.
No doubt. You know, we're having the conversation on the show today, Ship, about Balky and asking fans to react to the entire offseason to this point, right, and give him some kind of – give us – some kind of idea of how they feel about it. We had our first caller this morning that mentioned that he thinks Balky should be gone if they don't make the playoffs this year. So I'll ask it this way. What is the best argument for Trent Balky to be on the hot seat here in Jacksonville this year?
I mean, regardless of how people think, you know, about his tenure and about individual decisions. And I've been, you know, a vocal critic of some individual decisions. I've said it before, and I truly believe that when you look at the big picture of things and how the ownership will probably think, as little as last year's 9-8 season got them, it, you know, resulted in no playoffs. I do think the back-to-back winning seasons actually mean something. It to me would have to be a disastrous level season for him to be on the hot seat. I've operated this entire offseason along the lines of, I don't think this is somebody who's on the hot seat. He, in my opinion, hasn't made moves like somebody's on the hot seat. He's made moves that will, you know, go into effect next 1, 2, 3 years that will have impacts. I truly believe, other than maybe a truly disastrous, like, last place AFC South finish, that he's not going to be on the hot seat.
All right, let's get into a few specific players here just quickly in our last little bit of time with you, Ship. Brenton Strange, year two. What should Jaguar fans think is reasonable in terms of a return from him?
Well, I think he's obviously going to play more. I think that they've already sent the message that they're going to give him more opportunities to prove himself, opportunities that he didn't get last year. So I believe last year he was third among their tight ends and snaps after Luke Farrell. I'd expect him to jump into second this year, take on more of that lead, you know, blocking tight end role, and see, you know, more targets, more design stuff in the passing game. He was just, you know, in terms of the construction of the offense and the passing game last year, you know, he was an afterthought. It made sense because they had so many other pass catching options, but you obviously want to get more out of a second-round pick, so I'd say maybe you see, you know, 30 or so targets for him this year.
Okay, what about this year's second-round pick, Mason Smith?
I think you're going to see him play in a rotational role. I think he's going to play more than, say, Strange did last year, but I don't think he's going to be an every-down starter. If you look at the contracts for Will Robinson-Harris and Devon Hamilton, they're going to be on the books for Devon Hamilton for at least the next 2 years. There's no clear out, but there is an out in Robinson Harris's contract next year. So it makes sense to me to develop Smith a little bit behind him and then next year bump him up a spot on the, on, you know, the depth chart, give him more snaps next to Eric Armstead, and ultimately move on from the veteran Robinson Harris.
All right, and then who's your favorite guy that they got after the third round this year?
I'm a big Javon Foster fan. I was a fan of him throughout the process. Some people, you know, I've talked to who have scouted him, who have, you know, seen him work out, that kind of stuff. They say that he has, you know, more potential than really anybody was giving him credit for. And if you, in my opinion, run down the list of the third round offensive tackles, I don't think there's many, if any, that are, you know, stand out better than Javon Foster. I think he can be, you know, his floor is a swing tackle. I think he can be a reliable swing tackle right away, which I think there's some value in that in the fourth round, but I think he has starter upside. And offensive tackles won that position, one of those positions where you don't really find starters outside the early round. So if they can somehow develop him into that kind of role, that's just a massive value in the fourth round.
I think the Jaguars roster is at a point right now where they don't need impact as they have in previous years from undrafted free agents. But among the undrafted free agents they signed, who is your favorite?
I'm a big Joshua Cephas fan. I think he shows a lot of talent just as a natural receiver. He has some of the best hands in the draft. You know, I talked to Eric Galco, the director of player operations at the East-West Shrine Bowl where he was at, and he just had loads of compliments to say. He thinks he can develop into, you know, a reliable contributor relatively early in his career. You look at his tape, and he just made some highlight reel catches all throughout his career. So he's somebody who I'm really interested in. He's going to have to prove himself, I think, some on special teams to have a true crack to make the roster, but I think there's a lot of upside there.
All right. There's always a lot of upside with our man John Shipley of Jaguar Report continuing to fight the good fight. The little birds say that NFL schedule may be coming out next week, Ship, so we'll have that on the horizon. What are you working on in the meantime?
Oh, just, you know, continuing to run through this draft class and the tape. I watched, you know, in my opinion, Mason Smith, if you want to watch any tape that's actually significant to the type of player he is, I think you have to go back, you know, 3 years to 2021. I watched some of that the other day, and I came way higher on that pick than I think I was when it was first made. So just continuing to watch these guys and see how they fit the Jaguars.
All right, Ship, we appreciate it, man. All the best. Stay well, and we'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate you guys.
Thank you, buddy. Underscore John underscore Shipley is where you'll find him out there on the X or Twitter platform, at underscore John underscore Shipley. All right, let's unpack that when we come back in a moment. If you want to get in with a reaction, anything John Shipley had to say, 641-1010 on the All-Pro Roofing phone lines with a text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures. Chad Ryder, NFL draft analyst from NFL.com, joins us at about 20 after the next hour. That's coming your way on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher, brought to you by
Kingfish Pest Control, proud partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars
on 1010XL.
All right, Johnny O's here. Hello, John Osher of Jaguars.com fame. How are you?
Good. Post-draft. Wrapping it up, cooling down, getting ready to move on to the rookie minicamp next week and then OTAs.
When is the rookie minicamp start?
Next week. I'm not sure which day exactly.
I think the schedule's coming out next Thursday.
Yeah, that's what you hear. So that
is what I hear. Yeah. That is right. And I'm not. No one told me not to say it. So next Thursday the 9th,
yeah.
NFL schedule coming out.
So that could be happening.
Talk about it Friday on the 10th after the schedule comes out next Thursday.
And then in years past, Doug's done minicamp Friday and Saturday, but I don't honestly know if that's exactly the schedule this year.
Okay.
But I know it's next weekend. I'm not sure.
That'd be post NFL schedule release Thursday.
Post theoretical.
Saturday, yes. Theoretical. Anyway, I don't even know. What would be a big secret?
It's coming. You know, that's how.
We already know who they're
playing,
just don't know when.
Right. That kind of stuff. What do you make of Jarvis Landry being here next week during the rookie minicamp?
If it's one more receiver who, affordable, veteran guy. My understanding is he's a I guess confident guy who is sort of an alpha personality. So brings a guy who, if somebody gets hurt, last year when receivers got hurt late, you didn't feel great about the options. I think he would be fourth and fifth option, I would think. I'm not sure he would be alpha dog in this receiver group, but I saw last year. I think they thought last year going in they had a lot of depth, and they didn't at receiver. So better to have five good options than four.
So from the Jags' perspective,
I don't think they're counting on him to be the guy,
right?
Obviously. So
from the Jags' perspective, though, why let go of Zay Jones now if you've got cap space and he doesn't impact your bottom line? You can release him before the start of the season.
Because
what if Gabe Davis gets hurt in July?
I sort of thought the same thing. I liked Zay. I liked what he brought in terms of being trustworthy for Trevor.
And for Zay, it's better, obviously.
Yeah,
you know, to get it as early as possible. But even the timing yesterday, like the Raiders, who Zay used to play for, signed Michael Gallup.
Right
before he got, really, like, that's one spot that could have possibly gone to him.
There were sort of a feeling that if they signed Calvin right around the deadline or right around the league year, that it was going to be, okay, sign Calvin and now release Zay. I think clearly whenever they got that third veteran piece, Zay was going to be, because of the injuries last year, because of the age, because of the feeling maybe he was not going to be able to be healthy, and the cap, just sort of cumulative, that was a decision. I really liked the idea Monday morning when I was thinking about the wide receivers of having Zay so that Brian Thomas wasn't have to produce week one. But
then again, if you're taking a receiver,
sure,
you know, that you said you would have taken at 17, You should expect them to produce week one, I think. I hear what you're saying.
I like being able to ease a guy in. But
ideal world. But, I mean, this is big boy football, too. Mm-hmm. You know, like he starred in the SEC, led the nation in touchdowns. We're not asking you to come in and be the sole. I mean, he's going to have Kirk,
right.
Davis,
he still has
Ingram.
The same
he's got a lot of help around
it. And I guess after last year of when it seemed like there was always sort of just an injury, when they didn't have four last year, meaning Ingram, Ridley, Jones, and Kirk, when they didn't have the four, they felt like they were really, really down, like they needed the foursome of threat. So I liked having that one guy, the veteran.
Well, I'm not arguing with you. And like, we don't know what Duvernay is going to be as a receiver. Like, they like Jamal Agnew as a piece, right? We don't know if they feel the same way about Duvernay's receiving ability.
It seems on paper that Duvernay may be a little more of an option as a pure receiver than Jamal and less Swiss Army knife.
Do you think Elijah Cooks is on this team? Man, I mean, is that the guy we should have our eye on that we're hoping shows that development?
Well, I think Parker Washington's got a,
but it's a different Parker Washington's like a slot only guy. Isn't
I think
he?
Parker's probably practice squad to start the way it shapes up now. You would think.
I think the Zay Jones release makes it a lot more likely he makes a team.
Yeah, I mean, if
because you're replacing
depending on
Ridley
what Jarvis
and Zay with Thomas and Davis.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, it could be. He sort of went back and forth with the practice squad last year. Practice squad is more of a roster mechanism now than it was. Like,
yeah, it is.
And it's more you sort of come up and down.
Like, what
you've
is
got 61 or 62 guys now.
What's the return game plan, right? Like, the Keelan Robinson pick looks like he's a return man.
Oh, no doubt.
Right?
Yeah.
So are they planning on deploying two on kickoffs? Because I think
like most teams are. Yeah.
Right, and that's the thing.
Yeah,
you know,
I think that's clearly the plan.
Does Parker Washington factor into that? Can he earn a role there
as a backup? I would think, but
Keelan Robinson's not guaranteed to have that spot just because you drafted him.
Not guaranteed, but I think he would be. They seem, again, so much of how the kickoffs are going to play out is more theory now because you haven't really done it.
Mm-hmm.
But the thinking seems to be that you like running back skill back there with this new setup, as opposed to receiver skill. So Robinson would seem more of a fit.
Oh, I think he'll be the first guy in line for that second spot. But I'm just saying,
second
round picks bust. Fifth round picks certainly can turn out to not be what you thought they were going to be. Looking for a specific skill.
Yeah, I think these days you almost have to look at the practice squad top five or six guys as a part of your roster that just because they're on the practice squad, it's not that you don't like them, it's that you're trying to have 61 players instead of 50, whatever the number is.
Yeah.
So, back to Zay though, I was not shocked at the release. It was an eyebrow raiser, and you know, I get in this day and age, you're trying to roll over cap room because you're going to need it at some point. So, clearly a cap decision.
What was your favorite pick of the Jaguars draft?
Well, If he remains healthy, I like the second round pick, Mason Smith. You know, the more you look at him, really has that potential to be the Jeffrey Simmons type of defensive tackle, tall, long. I'm not saying he's going to be that level because Simmons has been out of this world, but he sure has all the traits of a guy who can be that. Anytime you draft a guy, you know, and the ACL happened in 2022, came back from it in 23. The history with these ACLs now tells you that second year back, as a young player, you're back. So that's an intriguing pick. And, you know, beyond that, Brian Thomas obviously is exciting to watch. And the kicker was fun.
Cam Little.
Yeah. So, but I don't know if I can say I'm like, that's my number one excitement level. But I liked the just moving toward getting stouter on the defensive front. I think you needed to do that after last year. They give themselves a lot of options. They give themselves a lot of bodies in what clearly is going to be a four-man front going forward.
I think Mason Smith, honestly, and it helps having him on this roster and focusing in on him the last couple months or month or whatever. Eric Armstead is a great mold for what Mason Smith can become. Like,
yeah.
I look at Simmons, and I know Mason Smith actually weighs about 10 pounds more than Simmons, but Simmons is a little more compact. Like,
right.
I think of him more as low to the ground, but explosive.
Yeah.
He can penetrate, but he's also so strong at the point of attack. It's
yeah.
tough to move him. I just feel like Mason Smith is a little more high cut.
Yeah,
that
it's fair.
I'm just looking for, you know, disruption.
You would love Armstead to play X years and then Smith to take over and be Armstead.
I think that's what they hold. Like, yeah. I think, I'm not saying he's Henderson or Stroud, but I think that's what Balky looks in like his anchor.
Right.
Like, this is my first long-term building block
right.
here that I'm going to rebuild this unit with.
Yeah, and he, you know, they clearly wanted to get bigger, stronger, faster, and that's what the draft, they said it. It was every pick they looked at and said, you know, does this make us bigger, stronger, faster, or are we more the team we envision? So on paper, yes.
We have Chad Ryder coming up from NFL.com to join us to talk about some of these picks, John. But let me ask you, from the Jags are like cap space wizards, apparently, and just are printing money somehow with the cap space. And we don't know all the details of how Josh Allen's extension may have provided even more, but over the cap had him with the third most cap space in the league. And Spotrac had him over $30 million as well. This is before the Zay Jones release. Mm-hmm. They got a ton of money. And granted, you can use it in a variety of ways. You could take a big early cap hit on Trevor Lawrence if you get an extension done. But
which makes some sense.
Sure. Yeah. Take it while you got the excess, right? And
right.
then in future years, it's a lot more manageable. But do you think if they're going to add a piece, a significant piece, like a next-in-line piece?
Right.
I'm not talking about a starter. Like corner, edge rush, where would they spend their
capital? I still wonder if corner, nickel, and I know Jerrion Jones looks like he can be that guy. Still a third-round pick you're not sure of. I still wonder if corner, nickel might be something that they keep in their back pocket. Edge, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say all offseason they're going to sign an edge rusher when we said it all offseason last year and they didn't do it. You know, so it almost sounds like
– I feel like, honestly, like I don't – I would be happy if they added an edge,
yeah.
right? A guy who's proven a little bit. But if you look at it right now, like last year you had Trayvon Walker coming off a rookie season with, what, 3.5 sacks?
Sure. Yeah.
You had Josh Allen who in three previous years hadn't put 17 together in 3 years. So now you got two guys who like –
You feel much better
you
that you
about
know
your
what those guys
right,
are.
Your
right.
front-end guys are a lot better, and they may look at Travis Gibson and say, this is a guy 2 years ago at 8 sacks.
Yeah.
This is not, you know, this, like, who was our guy last year, Smoot? You know,
right.
who was the next man up? They may feel like they have improved in that area, not
right.
to the degree that others would like to see, I mean, necessarily.
I don't think there's any doubt that, I mean, I think some of it is clearly for a Trevor Lawrence deal that I would expect to get done before the season. Trent also likes to keep some cap room, some maneuverability for the trade deadline. So it's looking
but
way
they
out.
Got a lot right now.
Right. I mean,
right. You could go sign a corner for $12 million.
Right.
And be fine.
Right.
You know, and have plenty of operating capital. We'll see how that all works out. Let's take a break here and we'll come back and find out what Chad Ryder thought about what the Jags did with their selections in this NFL draft. More with John Osier, the senior writer over at Jaguars.com, here with us. If you want to get in, 641-1010 is the way to do it. You're listening to Jaguars Today here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Oh No's
with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Brought to you by
Kingfish Pest Control, proud partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars on 1010XL.
All right, let's get a little outside perspective on what the Jaguars did in this NFL draft. Coming up, we'll run through the picks with Chad Ryder of NFL.com, who's kind enough to join us many times throughout the draft process leading up to it. So it's always nice to reflect and say, okay, so we think they should have done. Here's what I would have done. Do I see a vision for what they had planned, or do I just hate it, or is it somewhere in the middle? Chad Ryder from NFL.com joining us here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Chad. How are you?
Good morning. I'm
I'm glad you guys are still playing the journey for me. Appreciate that.
We'll move on if you want us to, man. I mean, if you're getting tired of it, okay.
I would sing right now, but I'm on the West Coast and I'm barely awake.
Yeah, so it's pretty early out there.
I'm good.
All right. Well, if you ever want to mix it up, you just tell Dylan and he'll spin you whatever hit you want, man. So it's all good.
I'm good.
All right. Well, let's just jump in to what the Jags did here. Let's start in the first round. Brian Thomas, the player at the selection, 23rd overall, and B, what they did to accumulate more assets in the move back, and C, was that the right move to make? Just what did you think about the process and who they ended up with in round one?
Yeah, all good. I think it's great to move back. They found a player of value at that 23 spot. Look, if they would have either released Zay Jones before the draft or said they were going to do so, this would have been a no-brainer, right? Like they were really thinking about that. And we've talked about Brian Thomas since you guys first had mm-hmm. me on, you know, a few months ago. So made a lot of sense to me. Being able to acquire more assets is great. Home run for them.
Do you like the value in the pick with Mason Smith there in the second round? And how much has he moved in your evaluation from last year to this year, getting ready for the process?
Well, in every mock draft, except maybe the first one right out of the chute after the Super Bowl, so after the combine, I have either put his name in that pick and then took it out because things worked out a certain way. To me, I was like, oh, didn't I project that? And then I looked back to my own ones. It was like, oh, no, I had him going 49-1. And so, like, it made a lot of sense to me. And so that's pretty much where I had him in the spot. There's some risk there. He's not been super productive. It's really, you're really hoping that his size and athleticism kind of pays off, in time, sort of like an Austin Johnson, maybe, coming out of Penn State a few years ago, just that big body that has some athleticism. So he was picked right in the area where I figured he would be.
All right. Well, that's you're one of the handful, I think, and a lot of people saying that was a reach. What did you make of the Jarian Jones selection? I think what happens, Chad, is we look at mocks often, and look, you do a great job. Many of the draft analysts do a great job, but I don't know all these players the way you do. And I see a guy like TJ Tampa projected in the second round, and the Jags need a corner, and here we are at pick 96. Oh, that makes sense. And then, looking at the scouting report, maybe he's better as a zone guy who breaks on the ball, maybe doesn't fit Ryan Nielsen's thing. So, he ends up falling into the late fourth round. Jaguar fans, some upset. Hey, we knew who this guy was. We were conditioned to think he was a second-round pick. Why didn't we take him? What did you make of the selection of Jarian Jones amongst the players that were available at that position?
Well, I had TJ Tampa as a third-round pick, and with the potential of going to the fourth round, because he's okay. He shows some good. He's not a sudden guy. And I had Jarian Jones also in the mid-third round. So actually Jones went a little later than I thought, because he gives you not only a inside-outside versatile guy, but he's a team leader, very athletic guy. He really played well this year. He kind of came on this year and really showed what he could do. So to be honest, I thought he was just as good a value as Tampa in that spot.
We talked with you throughout the draft process about offensive line, specifically tackle, for the Jags as a potential need because of the two guys they have that are going to be gone potentially next year. They don't address that until the fourth round with Javon Foster. How do you like the pick of Foster out of Mizzou?
Well, it's funny. Right after the Super Bowl, I had the Jaguars picking Foster in the second round because I thought he could be one of these guys that through the process maybe – raise the stock a little bit. You project a few of those guys to see, what they can do. And that never happened through the process. He's okay athletic. He's not great. He's not super athletically. Looked good at in the All-Star games. Not great. So fourth round turned out to be the spot for him. And so for me, I thought he was great value there because he still could become a really solid player for him, either as a swing tackle or, as you mentioned, when those guys move on, or he could slide into guard, actually, too. Or he could, take one of these spots. So in the fourth round, thought it was great value, made a lot of sense to me.
By the way, I hope Trent Baalke's listening. This might be the best. Like, all right, really good in the first round, which most people agree on. Had Mason Smith projected right about in the middle of round two. Mm-hmm. Had Jones rated higher than he went, and at one point had Javon Foster going in the second round. So, okay, we're pretty content with those four. Jordan Jefferson's a big space eater out of LSU on a defense. Now, granted, you can have good players on bad defenses, but this team struggled against the run, and you would expect that this is his calling card. His former defensive coordinator is now on the Jags staff. I'm sure they relied on his thoughts here, but what did you make of the Jefferson pick?
A little early for me, but I mean, given the relationship you just mentioned and the need that they had to bolster the front, I mean, I sort of get it. But I would have waited a little bit on that. In that particular pick, but the reason that he went that high is because he's a massive guy, but he does get off the ball pretty quickly. And I think that was kind of the thing that a lot of guys that are that size and play that role are not the first ones off the snap. And that's maybe a thing that team really liked him. He was good at West Virginia. So this is, you know, I got it. I might've waited a little bit for him, but he does have that one special thing that not a lot of guys his size have.
I think it was a pretty good bet going into the draft that the Jags would wind up selecting two corners at some point, right, in this draft. We already mentioned Jarian Jones there in the third round out of FSU. De'Andre Prince, the second one, the cornerback out of Ole Miss. What do you see as the upside with a guy like Prince?
You know, he's an excellent athlete, and he's competitive. That's one thing I always look for in corners. Does he get after his man? And he's sticky enough to be, you know, a good day three pick in terms of his coverage. So solid pick in the third. They need, like you said, they needed to find depth, and he's as good as any other corner they could have gotten on day three.
All right. And I'm not going to get too deep into these specialists here. I think we saw a lot of teams.
Oh, no. Whoa.
You want to?
Cam Little.
Okay.
Cam Little was my number one kicker.
Okay.
That dude, he doesn't look like much. Okay. When you look at him. But that dude will be making 60 yarders. And I was one of the few media people who stuck around for the specialist workout at the combine. Okay. They did a competition with two teams. Cam Little had to make a 60 yarder to win the competition. He stood up and did it. And he proved at Arkansas, that guy's good. And I will be surprised if he's not a really good pro.
All right, Chad Wright. Oh, whoa. Do not Cam Little here. All right. I was just trying to get through this here, brother, because I feel like a lot of people, Chad, we saw, like, with the Keelan Robinson pick, a lot of people are trying to figure out where is the right time to draft a second return specialist with the new rules changing. So, you know, and we can see his profile there. But let's just a thought, if you have one, on Miles Cole. How much of a project is he, the seventh round outside linebacker or edge rusher that they brought in?
I thought he'd go earlier. To me, he's like a day three version of Trevon Walker, basically. So I thought he'd go fourth, fifth round. So I thought that was a really good. The Jags probably had, they're in the top quarter of my grade, of my draft thought overall, like sixth or seventh best grade in the draft.
Damn.
Yeah.
Can you have pockets cut that and I'll write that?
Right. Oh, he's doing it. He's working on it right now.
Does anything stand out for you with what they did in undrafted free agency? I know fans have kind of circled around Joshua Cephas, the wide receiver out of UTSA, but did anything else stand out for you from that group?
Well, you know, Wayne Ruby out of Mount Union, I thought he was a draftable guy. He didn't work out the best, so he didn't get drafted, but he's a really interesting guy too, a receiver. It wouldn't shock me if he stuck on the practice squad and eventually became a contributor. Steven Jones, the offensive lineman from Oregon, is tough, strong guy. He's got a chance to make it. Really like him. Andre Carter, again, Western Michigan guy, and then he went to Indiana. Just a solid edge. We'll see if he can make a difference on this team. Josh Proctor, the safety, has a chance to make the team too. Special teamer, backup safety. They did a good job. They picked up some players that one or two of them could stick on the roster.
Chad Ryder. Going to bring us all out of the – it's all right. Got a level to – we're excited. Sixth or seventh best out of all 32 squads right there.
And honestly, the only thing I really kind of didn't
He's not just saying.
The only thing I kind of dinged him for was he had to include the Calvin Ridley trade in that. And I'm not a big fan for a guy that's sort of, you know, coming off a suspension, kind of a rental. You give him premium pick for him. And, you know, they probably tried to re-sign him, but, you know, that. So I just, you have to take that into consideration, too. Like the Browns trade, they didn't have that many picks, but you have to include Deshaun Washington, which, of course, has been, you know, sort of a train wreck so far. So,
yeah.
Those are the other things you kind of have to consider when looking at draft.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And, you know, then again, they also come away with the third and fourth rounder next year that they wouldn't have had. So that'll factor in. All right. Well, you know what? If Jaguar fans need a little positivity this morning, I wasn't sure which way you're going to go, quite frankly, Chad. And we're happy that you're pretty content with what they did. And hopefully your vision of it is the correct one because we need these picks to pan out. But look, we know you do a tremendous job, man. It's very impressive to have the knowledge to be able to talk about these prospects at the drop of a hat or with your 7-round mocks. It's absolutely phenomenal work. We love having you on. So we'll hopefully get you right back in the process again next year. But thanks for all the many visits with us throughout draft season.
No worries, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
You got it, brother. All right, Chad Ryder. I like it. I really thought this would be a little bit more like, I had this guy. It may turn out, but I had this guy rated a round later or whatever. And
yeah, I do a draft roundup, and that's consistent with what he talked about with all of them. He loved the first round. I think he gave him an A- for the whole draft. Like, I forget what it was, but everything lined up with – he wasn't just saying this because it was a local market.
No, I get what – right. He's going to put his rankings out anyway and have his projections. And didn't realize he had Javon Foster mocked in the second to the Jags way back in February, you know? So there's a guy – and again, this happens, right? Brayden Fisk, we talked about, Tony, at one point, was mocked in the fifth round around that point in time, and he went – you know, after a trade-up in the second round, you know, in the top 40-ish picks. So things change throughout the course of the process. Let's come back, reflect on what we heard there, look at some of the reactions to what kind of job Trent Baalke has done, and let's assess how we think he has done. It's not perfect, but it's certainly not catastrophic, in my opinion, the job Trent Baalke has done. It's our Chad and Sandy Real Estate Question of the Day. We'll continue on with Jaguars today, straight ahead on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Nobody knows the Jags like Johnny O.
Oh, knows. Brought to you by
Kingfish Pest Control, proud partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
On 1010XL.
Hey, we'll go around the league here in a minute. I just saw somebody, I'm just reading through a lot of reactions to today's question about Trent Baalke. And somebody said he went all in on the traits drafting this year. We'll see, let's hope it pans out. And I get it with Mason Smith, right? I mean, Mason Smith is like you poured the mold of what you want, a hybrid defensive lineman who can slide all around the formation. But, like, when they drafted Jarian Jones, I'm looking, I'm like, kind of got, like, shortish arms, you know, for the position. Like, you know what? And I wonder.
Well, and the knock I heard from a lot of fans, well, he didn't care about college production. Well, Jarian Jones, had a terrific year as a senior.
Outstanding. Like, was one of the best cover men in the country in man coverage.
He probably wouldn't have gotten drafted a tie this time last year. Like, he
clearly did produce,
played his way
into that spot. But I just looked at it like here's a guy with short arms at corner, right? And Baalke does like that, and a lot of GMs do.
Baalke's a Parcells traits draft.
Like, and so I saw them taking him, like, are people going to go, this guy's got short? You know, like, he almost can't win at this point. It's either too many traits, not enough traits,
if he had taken guys without the traits.
Then you're like, well, what is he doing? Right. Right. You can't line up in this league with these little T-Rex arms.
Right.
But Jarian Jones is not a midget or anything like that. You know what I mean? It's just not like when you hit those ideals of how you want everything to be, and then you're like, ding, 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 ding.
Most GMs have, I would say all GMs have certain attributes that they won't go below.
Thresholds. Yeah.
So
unless you get an exceptional player. And that
even then, some won't.
Some won't, but or some will do it, but they won't do it like if he falls to a range where, you know, it's absurd not to take a chance on him. And look, sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. There's a reason that teams do that. It all started with the Cowboys with Gil Brandt and trying to make it more of a science, right? It's not a science, but it's a pseudoscience. You know?
But it, it's a percentage projection business that you're going to miss on guys, some.
More Pro Bowl players at this position are going to have X amount of attributes.
Right.
And so
if you're going to –
you can't.
And if you hit, then you've got a team that has the right traits to be good in the NFL.
All right. We will get to some of this reaction. We'll discuss our thoughts on the offseason here in a moment. But, Tony, why don't we take a tour of the rest of the NFL?
Now, gems around the NFL, brought to you by Beaches Jewelry and Pawn in Jacks Beach.
Several fifth-year options were picked up on Tuesday. Baltimore linebacker Odafe Owe, Cleveland corner Greg Newsom II, New York Jets offensive lineman Elijah Vera Tucker. The Jags, in a move that should surprise no one, are not picking up the fifth-year option on Mac Jones. And the Denver Broncos are not picking up the option on quarterback Zach Wilson, who they just recently acquired in a trade from the New York Jets.
Steelers not doing it with Justin Fields either.
Correct. Dallas has officially signed running back Ezekiel Elliott on a one-year deal. He is expected to be in the Cowboys facility this week for team workouts. The Cowboys have also signed wide receiver Tyron Johnson, who was all the rage when the Jags used their number one spot on the waiver priority going into 2021 to pick him up after he was waived by the Chargers. He caught two passes in five games here before being waived again and going to the Raiders. He split the 2022 season between Houston and the Raiders, catching one pass in four games, did not appear in a game at all last year. Now they're back in Dallas. And cornerback Chris Harris announced his retirement from the NFL on Tuesday. Harris, originally signed as an undrafted free agent by the Denver Broncos in 2011, played 12 years in the league, making four Pro Bowls with the Broncos, a first-team All-Pro selection in 2016, two other second-team All-Pro selections, and was selected as a member of the 2010s All-Decade team by the Pro Football Hall of Fame, alongside Patrick Peterson, Darrell Revis, and Richard Sherman as the other corners selected as members of that team.
All right, thank you, Tony. Today we're asking folks in both poll form and expand on it if you want to form, basically your thoughts on what Trent Baalke has done this offseason. Did he do a great job, a good job? Is it average at best or below average slash bad job? John, how would you – let me start like this. What's the best single move you think Trent made this offseason, and what's the move that you would have liked to have seen that didn't get done?
I think getting Morse is the one that they had to get done. They had to solidify that. So I guess I would say that one. Armstead's probably up there. Just getting a couple of 10-year guys. My only concern with those guys is, you know, at 10 years, do they stay healthy the whole season? You know, but that would be a concern with anybody of that age. But I think they're moves they had to make. What would I have liked to them get done? I guess I wish they had had two first-round picks and could have taken a corner too. But you had to take something in the first round. So that would probably be – I said all before the draft I thought they'd take a corner. So that would maybe be the one thing that I would have done. But I don't dislike the Thomas pick.
What about you, Tone?
I'm very solidly in the good job camp, leaning towards great, right? Going into the offseason, as you mentioned, John, it's the top two priorities for me were get the deal done with Josh, get Fortner off the field, right? Like, those were the things that I had as priorities for this team going into the offseason. Check, check, plus all the other work. I didn't have any inkling that they'd be willing to make a deal like Armstead. Right, like that one caught me way off guard. It makes all kinds of sense for that to be the direction they go, and I love the acquisition there. I think it's hard to go completely into the great job camp for me because the draft is such a who knows what's going to happen, you know, with how all of this stuff is going to work. But from the process of improving their roster, I don't know what else they could have done that I would have feel better about what they're doing on the roster than I do today.
And they also had to go transition to a new defense while doing it.
Yes.
So, anyway, Mike.
Absolutely. I more like Tony, like I'm closer to great job than I am to average at best. I'm in that. It's firmly in the good job. Like,
yeah.
Great is, let's.
You have to see.
You got to hold right. Something back for me, right? Like, I mean, it could turn out to be great. A lot of things could turn out to be great. If the Jags go deep into the playoffs, it's been a great year for everybody, right? Yeah. That's kind of how it goes. And
the 2017 free agency class was great.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Like, we all felt good about it. If we had asked this kind of question right after it had all gotten done, we'd be like, good, let's see if it turns out to be great.
Because we'd be like, hey, Calais Campbell's never been a double-figure sack guy. What are we doing here exactly, right? He's pretty old, too. Oh. Right. Well, he's also never played, like, strictly 4-3 end where he could get after the quarterback like that. So I'm firmly in the good job category and very happy with it. Like, to me, this is me. I don't have any control over it, folks. My baseline where I'm starting today, Balky sees not even a hint of warmth to it. Balky's on a cool as a cucumber seat right now, in my opinion.
But how can you say that?
Well, I because that's my opinion. Right. And then, you know, I think it would have to be, like we had our very first caller today, Jerome said, if he misses the playoffs, he should be on the hot seat. I think there's a lot of nuance in there. They go 9-8 again. Did Trevor Lawrence miss a month? Did he miss 2 months, right? I mean, you did go out there and shore up the backup position there, but what kind of wave of injuries? You know, and people say, well, Balky's got to have better depth. Okay. For instance, name the best backup center in the league. I'm sorry. Name me a backup center in the league. All the people saying, if Morse gets hurt, it's a catastrophe. If Morse gets hurt, we've got more experience at center than almost any team in the National Football League.
Considering Fortner and Shatley.
Right. I mean, either one could. And I'm not saying they're great. And you say, well, it's a bad experience. Trevor Lawrence wasn't getting hit on every single play from everyone lining up opposite Luke Fortner last year. Could you upgrade? Yes. They felt like they did. Okay. If Creed Humphrey goes down for Kansas City, are they going to be in trouble?
Were they supposed to sign two free agents?
I think so. Okay. I think, right. Like, I don't know. Or just better. Get rid of Fortner entirely. And never mind the fact that you do have to sprinkle in some guys on rookie contracts that make your cap hum, you know. And granted, there's still money out there to get another center, but let's say you did. Okay, hey, would you like to come be our backup center? We got the starter.
I don't think there's a GM in the league who would have, in Balky's situation, signed Mitch Morse, gone and readdressed center.
No, what you could do, and I'm not saying it's impossible to do this, you could have drafted. You could have tried to get in position to draft like a guy who could play guard this year with an idea of maybe moving to center. Like, could you bring in – if you brought in Jackson Powers Johnson and you just said open competition, center job, right guard job, three guys, two positions, may the best two play, right? Is it possible that he wins the guard job over Brandon Scherff? Yeah, I think it is, okay? But it's also – then, okay, let's say, great, you're better at right guard, and you got a long-term plan at center. Who's your number one wide receiver now, right? And, you know, what did you do? Did you get Powers Johnson in the first round? You got him in the second round. He went ahead of your pick, so you would have had to be in a different guy. And, I mean, there are different ways to do it. I'm not saying it couldn't have worked that way.
You
could give something
any
up.
Draft apart or any offseason apart, but – considering that they said at the start, we need to get stouter, we need to get better on the off. They did that, and they addressed a lot of needs in about as good a way as you could have done.
Yeah, and I know, you know, fans, we're all reacting to what do we feel like the next need is. And everyone, you know, a lot of fans are willing to say whoever the third edge guy is going to be. They're just not good at that third edge. And so, you know, out of curiosity, Kansas City just won a Super Bowl. They finished second in the NFL in sacks last year. They have Chris Jones on the interior, so that obviously helps a lot of what they want to do in their pass rush. Their edge guys.
Karloftis and Dana.
Behind them, Malik Herring, Charles Omenihu, who they just signed this year.
Right, I've heard of him, who they just signed. Right.
Right. Like, they just added that kind of – the point being – that I know fans get focused on, well, the third edge just isn't good enough. And I agree with you, last year they could have done more to address that than they wound up doing. But it's not that the Jags are so miserable at that spot and everyone else in the league is lapping us, right, with the third guy on the depth chart. It's the same thing with the offensive line discussions. It's the Jags right now on their roster have four guys that can play offensive tackle anytime they need them to. How many teams feel that way?
Right.
Right? Like, it's not that they're thin. necessarily at those kind of spots. It's that we haven't seen all of them on the field together. We wish that they were better when they're at their absolute top of the game. Cool. You know?
Spell Omenihu for me, please.
O-M-E-N-I-H-U.
I-H-U. I would not have gotten that right. All right. Just curious to what his numbers have been, like, compared to Travis Gibson. I agree with you, Tone.
Yeah.
Like, okay, yes, Chris Jones, but Eric Armstead is supposed to be our Chris Jones. I'm not saying he's the exact same player. They don't play defensive end.
Right.
Okay? So, Carlottis, good player. Is he better than Josh Allen? No. Michael Dana is a good player. Is he better than Trayvon Walker is right now? I don't think so.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? How many folks will they have Mahomes? Okay. Yes, they do. Right?
We don't have that.
They're
nice
the only team that has Mahomes. Right. Okay. And yet they're winning. So you don't, you know, this idea of our pass rush is going to be this or that. Well, A, Eric Armstead and Mason Smith, if they get push in the middle, it's going to make Travis Gibson better when he's on the field. Or it's going to make whomever is in there rushing the passer better when he's on the field. At least that's the hope. And I get it. It's not. I'm not. And we're not telling you it's everything's going to work out with the ideal end of the range, right? But this is their vision for if it works. This is how we see it coming together. Menihu.
7 sacks last year.
Thank you. 4.5 the year before. Yeah. 7 last year. Gibson had 8 the year before, I believe, right? And then it didn't do much last year.
Right.
So I bet they're fairly comparable in what they produced in the last 2 years.
Overall, similar.
In terms of sack numbers, just in terms of sack numbers. I can't get into, you know, too many of the particulars beyond that. But
yeah. And that's not to say that I would love to see them address it. I'm cool with them adding another guy.
Sure.
Right? You know, to that rotation. I was very much in favor of it last year. I don't like that they didn't do something like that last year, that we went into the season with Kalavon Chase on as the 3. Gross. Right? Like, just didn't add anything to when one of those 2 guys had to come off the field, you put Kalavon on the field, it's like, okay, we're getting nothing for this.
John, what do you have coming up over at Jaguars.com?
Sort of preparing for the theoretical schedule release, which will come out at some point. But I'll be on the Huddle Up podcast later on today with Bucky Brooks and JP Shadrick, and then trying to talk to some college coaches around the country about these guys they brought in.
Yeah, so, right. Get a little.
That's what you do post draft.
You do. You get some firsthand scouting reports on them. So Chad Ryder, if you want to have a little positivity on what the Jags did, he has no affiliation with Jacksonville whatsoever. He really liked it. Had him at 6 or 7 among all teams
right.
in terms of the entire draft haul and what they did with the process with the first round and everything. You can go back and check that out on demand. John Shipley joined us earlier. We thank both of those gentlemen.
Chip!
And, of course, the great Johnny O. John, have a great week.
Good show. Thank you, buddy.
All right, buddy. We'll see you next week. For Tony Smith, for Dylan Denmark, I'm Mike Dempsey. Stick around as Helmets and Heels is coming your way right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.